Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome back. My name is Chris.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things. This time we're covering Mission Impossible. It's Mission Impossible Mondays, baby.
Mission Impossible Mondays.
I'm sorry. I said it wrong. It's Mission:Impossible.
Mondays.
Yeah.
Is there a colon between impossible? So it's Mission:Impossible.
Semicolon.
Semicolon.
Mondays.
Mondays.
Part one.
Part uno. Next week will be part two.
If you're new to the show, we're gonna do a whole recap play by play as quick as we can of this movie. Came out in 1996, directed by Brian De Palma, the legend himself, and then kind of like in a Fast and Furious way, just evolved into a franchise completely unlike what started it, mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. But Chris, before we get into that, welcome back, buddy.
It's been a while.
This is the beginning of a brand new chapter for Streaming Things.
It is. Yeah. A successful chapter. I'm manifesting it. Mm-hmm. Not that mm-hmm. we've been unsuccessful, but I mean, like, more success would be nice.
This would be the next level.
Yeah.
The next tier.
Yeah, we're getting a promotion. We've been working hard. We earned some extra PTO, but that's not going to cut it.
We earned that PTO, baby.
We need the whole new position, boss. And you're the boss, listener. Promote us, baby.
Promote us.
Literally. Share us on social media.
put us in, coach.
Yeah, it's our time.
I want to play.
Yeah, we took a vacay. We talked extensively on later episodes that you'll hear this week about our trip in LA. Steve took his mental health time. I just kind of sat in a corner in the dark and rocked back and forth for a few days, which is generally how I recharge, you know, mumbling to myself. I don't know. That's just what works for me. I'm not going to judge you guys for whatever you do.
Whatever you need to do to work mm-hmm. on yourself, man, you do it.
So starting today, we're going to be covering Mission Impossible, the entire franchise, every Monday, except for 1 week where we have to double up to get it in before Dead Reckoning Part 1 comes out, the seventh installment. And then we're going to go to the theater on the premiere and watch that movie and finish it all off, baby. So look forward to that. And then every Tuesday, you're going to get episodes of our Lost coverage. Steve's already seen the show. Madison and I are watching for the first time. Again, once we're done with Mission Impossible, we'll probably drop 2 Lost episodes per week. So you don't have to just agonizingly, slowly revisit one of your favorite shows. Every Friday, you're going to hear Steve and Phil covering Star Trek Strange New Worlds Season 2.
Yeah, where my trackers at?
Mm-hmm. And make it so. And we're going to also, did I do it right?
You did it. Yeah. Good job, man. I'm proud of you.
We're going to also do Crossing Streams segments again each week where Steve and I talk about other movies and shows that we've been watching, just to kind of lightly touch upon them to show that, you know, hey, maybe you want to check them out.
And this week, just to give you a little preview, tomorrow is the first of many Crossing Streams, but we will be talking about our trip to L.A., the Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse premiere. So if you've been hankering for our stories about our adventure on the West Coast, that'll be tomorrow. Check it out.
I'm sure you've been hankering. And then also, we're going to be doing our patron chosen movies each week as well. So this week is Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, directed by George Clooney. So that'll be different every week. So I really think there's something for everybody each week. And the super fans, the stream fiends, will have five episodes for their daily commutes or whatever it is that you do. We don't know. We don't judge you. We don't inquire into those kind of things.
Yeah, we love you for you.
That's right. That's right. And then even, the filthy casuals can just tune into one or two. And everybody's good.
The right? Normies can stick around for Mission Impossible and bounce.
Our beloved patrons will have even more content.
Mm-hmm.
We should talk about our June poll, probably, shouldn't we, Steve?
Sure. Do we have the nominees ready?
We don't, but we have the general gist.
Okay.
I know one that I demand is on the list, and maybe and maybe you can have a demanded one.
Sure.
And then Madison, and then I'll just get two.
But what is the theme? What is the theme? Well, I mean, we'll definitely post the poll on Patreon before the end of the week, but what is the theme?
The theme for June is Labor Day. I don't know.
It's Labor Day. We're not wearing white after it.
It's officially Pride Month. So we're going to be talking about queer stories, queer movies, LGBTQ themed. And so we're going to nominate four of those and have the patrons vote upon them and talk about the winner. And I nominate Shiva Baby. That is mandated. One of my favorite films, a crisp like 82 minutes. You can't go wrong. Man, Rachel like Sennett's rise to fame, and her and she is reteaming with the director Emma Seligman this August. I think it's coming out. It's called Bottoms. So it'd be it would be thematic if that movie
it's a
won.
Great title.
I think I made Enza watch it finally.
Oh, Shiva Baby.
Shiva Baby, and she adored it. Yeah, Bottoms is about a. These two lesbians, I think, start a fight club at their school so they can get laid, I think is the synopsis.
You know, sometimes you do have to go the extra mile to get some strange, you know what I'm saying? Some of us go to bars to hook up. Some people start a fight club.
Sometimes they do.
It's about you get what you put in, right?
Yes.
If you put in a lot, you're going to get a lot out of it.
It's just the general truism of life.
Right.
Is there any movie that you mandate must be on that list, Steve?
I haven't. We literally had this discussion maybe like a half hour before air, so I haven't really gotten time.
Yeah, we
to
dropped about 30 possible movies in that chat thread.
Yeah, you, Madison, and I were just like coming up with possible ideas, so I haven't really been able to sit with each one and really think about which one speaks to me. There are some bangers on that list, though.
But that's what's coming up this month, so if you're a patron, look forward to that dropping on the feed probably this week sometime, and then we'll give you a couple weeks to vote, and that'll cap off June's Patreon-chosen movie. But let's get in. Are you ready for some for the mission to become impossible?
I would say I choose to accept this mission.
Okay,
of reviewing Mission Impossible.
This podcast will shortly self-destruct. I'm not going to give you a time limit.
What?
You just got to be aware.
We are in a small room. That's very dangerous and irresponsible.
I know, but it's what's the life of an IMF agent.
Hey, you know.
We
knew the job when he accepted it.
Have you ever seen the TV show on which this is based?
So I never have, no.
I think it's from the late 60s, early 70s, and then they re-released it in like 1988 to 90. Is that what I'm seeing? I've never seen either iteration.
So I've never seen it. So the original one was from the fall of 1966 through the spring of 1973 on CBS.
Mm-hmm. Good times.
It won 8 Emmy Awards
and
3 Golden Globes, including Best Television Series Drama in 1968.
Not bad.
Yeah.
And the
so pretty successful. It's one of those movies or those TV shows that I think in the modern times, not a lot of people really... A lot of people may not remember the TV show.
Because they're dead.
Because they're dead. Well, God damn it, Chris. But at the time, it was like a really big deal. Like that was a very big show back in the day.
Like MacGyver.
What? Just like a MacGyver.
Mm-hmm.
Or a MASH.
Sure. That was a huge deal. Is that the MASH theme?
I think so. It could be something
else. Most watched episode of TV ever is the MASH finale.
Yeah, back when we didn't have anything else to do with our lives.
Man, tomato, tomato.
What's Radar up to?
Let's tune in.
But yeah, so they decided to adapt the beloved TV series into a movie in the early 90s. And when they first did that, who knew that it would become what that franchise is today?
Nobody did.
No.
I don't know how much of a hit this was at the time. I was watching it at 8 years old because, again, this was 1996. It was directed by Brian De Palma, which is, one of the most highly lauded directors of his era. He's up there with, Spielberg and Kubrick and all those guys. and he, you know, he did Scarface, The Untouchables, Body Double. So it's kind of weird that he was the one chosen for this project, honestly, in retrospect. And the writers, Bruce Geller, I think, was the creator of the original TV show. And then David Koepp was brought on to punch up the script. Very, very highly applauded screenwriter, David Koepp. Did Jurassic Park, among many, many
love
things.
David Koepp.
So, yeah, interesting. And this cast, what a journey through time. There's a,
yes.
There's a John Voight jump scare early on.
Oh, it's John Voight.
And we get...
I wish it was John Voight, but like his character from Anaconda.
Yeah, for sure. He gives the same vibe no matter what, because he's actually...
If you choose to accept it.
Isn't he a piece of shit in real life, right?
Kind of.
I know he's estranged from Angelina Jolie, and I don't know much about the details.
Yeah, he's a little problematic, but like...
That was a strong phrase,
piece
of shit.
In like an old man way.
Yeah.
Never look into the eyes of the men you kill.
We get Emilio Estevez. What about that?
Yeah, local favorite Emilio Estevez.
As soon as he popped up, I was like, quack, 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 quack.
You know Emilio lives in town, right?
In this town?
In Cincinnati, yeah.
No?
Yeah, he lives in Cincinnati.
He does not.
He 100% does.
Where?
I don't know. I think maybe
Indian
Mount
Hill?
Adams. I don't know. Maybe Mount Adams. I don't know. He lives nearby because like he always is just in town. He's very involved with a lot of the movie productions that come through. Friend of the show, Phil, built a table for him. So like,
really?
Yeah. Well,
can we find Emilio?
We probably could if we looked hard enough.
Can we go on an Emilio hunt?
We're just going to go around the streets of Cincinnati yelling Emilio.
No, we're just yelling quack, quack,
quack, quack. I was going for Emilio from Night of the Roxbury.
Interesting. Yeah. For those who don't know, you've been under a rock for 40 years. Emilio Estevez, famed brother of Charlie Sheen, son of Martin Sheen. Mm-hmm. The only one to keep the real surname of the family.
Estevez.
And make Papaw proud. Thank you. Yes, Estevez. It's probably Estevez or
Estevez,
something.
Estevez, yeah, probably.
But we're dumb. Mm-hmm. We don't pretend not to be. But anyway, I mean, just a kind of a trip down memory lane for me. I personally loved this movie, but again, I was 8 and haven't seen it probably since I was 10. Even though I'm a huge fan of this franchise, mm-hmm. I typically rewatch 4, 5, and 6 because they're just light years different. They're amazing action movies. What's your experience with this movie? Were you a fan prior to this? How long has it been since you've seen it? And so forth.
So when this movie came out, I remember seeing it. But yeah, I was like 10-ish when I saw it. And I remember not really getting it. Like I just, because a lot of people, like when it came out, I remember my stepdad was like, oh, it's kind of like James Bond. And I'm like, yeah. Oh, okay. So in my mind, I'm thinking, you think of like Sean Connery era James Bond at that time frame. So I'm like, where are the gadgets? All right, they got some gadgets, but they're not as flashy. Where's the suit? Where's the silly? But it's not that. It's very grounded. It's very spy stuff. So I didn't really understand it. I didn't really care for it. And now, and I haven't really, I don't think I've seen it since then. Because it's been a long time since I've seen this first movie. Because I'm like you. I actually watched 3 and beyond. Mm-hmm. I love him, Mission Impossible 3 mostly because of Philip Seymour Hoffman. He's like one of the best movie villains of all time. But then, yeah, like Mission Impossible 4 is like where this franchise really kind of figures out what it is, like what is 100% working and leans into it hard. And every movie since 4 is like a banger, right?
Yeah.
Maybe even gets better and better and better with each new installment. But this movie and number 2, the one we cover next week, is very much like they don't quite know what is working. They're doing a lot of things that they will drop and never do again. And you're seeing some things that they will eventually like pick up on and lean into with further installments. With that being said, I don't really like this movie.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not a huge fan of it. There's like moments of it where I can see the potential of it. I can see like, oh, this, there's a good thing here. But I think the directing, some of the writing styles of the time, like, oh, we have to have a romantic lead, like that type of thing, feeling pigeonholed. It just is, it's kind of boring. Like the first half of this movie is kind of boring to me. It picks up with the iconic wire heist scene. Like that scene's really cool. And the train scene's pretty cool at the end. But like everything else is kind of like, I don't really care. And Tom Cruise is kind of being weird because, again, I don't feel like they truly understand what they need to do to make this successful yet. So in that way, it's kind of fun to watch where you're like, it's there. I can see them trying to polish this diamond out. But it's so rough around the edges in this movie, and it's not what makes Mission Impossible great. I feel like a lot of people, I know a lot of our fans that listen to the show have not seen these movies, and they will probably be watching these movies for the first time with us, with this coverage. And I just want to say, hold on. If you didn't like this movie, just stick with it. Like, because literally 4 and beyond are amazing. I really like 3, and 2's dumb fun. Like, 2's terrible, but it's dumb fun. Whereas this is just John kind of boring Woo version. To me. Yeah.
They become vastly different for sure. And it's kind of hard to say if you like, you know, it's definitely not, it's like Fast. Like I said, the Fast and Furious seems silly to compare it to, but it's
a good comparison. Like, I think
the difference between 6 and 1 is the only thing I can compare it to, because that's such a chasm is Fast and Furious, you know? Mm-hmm.
This is the first Fast and Furious. They're stealing DVD players.
Yeah. They're street racers.
And then in the more recent, Fast and Furious, they're going into space to stop a satellite that can kill people or something.
World-class superheroes is what they are by the end. But I think it's interesting revisiting this, because I told you my dad used to call it Mission Incomprehensible, which is probably not a joke he made up. It was probably, I was 8 and thought my dad was clever.
That was the log line for
everybody
the,
was
for the
saying
Roger
it.
Ebert.
Yeah, exactly. Probably. But watching, not to say my dad's dumb, but because he was not. But watching it last night, I was like, this isn't that difficult to follow, you know, other than like the goofy face stuff, like where the masks are way too realistic.
Or it's just Tom Cruise playing an old man, and they're like, let's put Tom Cruise in that disguise. Like, he already is in that disguise.
Yeah,
Tom Cruise.
The first time it's him. Yeah. That's what the best they could do there. I thought it was pretty straightforward, like double agent, triple agent, double cross nonsense, but fun stuff. And I think it's interesting that, like, this first one is kind of fun for me because it's like a true blue spy caper.
Mm-hmm. I do appreciate that it is very much about the spies. Like, they're not trying to, I don't think Tom Cruise fires a gun in this movie.
He does not.
It's the only movie where he doesn't actually shoot a gun, and there's no shootouts per se.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that about it. It's really sticking hard into the espionage spy thriller aspect.
Yeah, it's much more noir, which is probably why they hired De Palma in retrospect. It's just, looking back, it's kind of a weird choice. I really had a good time with it. I think I'd give it a solid 7 out of 10 if I was going to give like an arbitrary number to it. Like, I had a good time. It's way better than 2. And I'm curious, it'll probably be toward the bottom of the overall ranking, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I had fun. It's interesting too, because the whole character of Ethan Hunt changes.
Yes.
Like, in the beginning, he's got this like Tom Cruise persona off of the late 80s and early 90s.
Hey guys, I'm Tom Cruise.
Yeah. He's all cocky.
I'm really laughing.
He just got out of his Top Gun jet. He's still worried about Goose at the beginning of this movie.
He's still worried about him.
And he's not that at all in the current iteration of Ethan Hunt. So it's kind of interesting. And Ving Rhames is the only person to be in every single Mission Impossible movie other than Tom Cruise.
I don't think he's in 2.
You don't think so?
I don't think Ving Rhames
we'll find
is in
out
2.
Soon, but I think that's the case. You could be right. 2 might be the...
I think 2's the albatross of all the...
2 might be the Fast and Furious 3, the Tokyo Drift.
It really is, yeah.
Of the Mission Impossible franchise. But his
to
relationship with
Brian
Luther
De Palma
is fascinating.
To John Woo is just an incredible decision.
It is. I just can't wait to see Tom Cruise. Honestly, I love these movies. And it's been a while because I've been waiting for a rewatch. Like, I didn't want to waste my rewatch on personal time, knowing we'd probably do some podcast stuff for it. And I've been craving watching these for like a year and a half.
Honestly, same. I've only seen Fallout once, but I've been itching to watch it like so often. But I always figured we would watch it for this show. So I've been holding off for more than a year.
Yeah, because rewatching a movie that I watched 2 months ago for the podcast is painful, because like I have to like pay very close attention and take notes and stuff. So I have to be economical with those choices. Big fan. So I'm really hyped even to watch 2, because I haven't watched it since I was a kid either. Anyway, diving right in.
I want to bring up a little bit of controversy to this movie.
Uh-huh.
Because we brought up the original TV show from the 60s that was beloved. A lot of people who are fans of the original TV show hate the movie franchise, specifically this movie. Because what it does is John Voight's character,
Jim Phelps.
Jim Phelps was like the main protagonist of the TV show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like so. So the thing with the TV show is Jim Phelps, who's like pretty much the main guy, he would get a team together, and usually there's at least one guest star who's part of the team, and then they would have a mission. But Phelps was always like, good work, team. Like,
yeah,
you know, he was kind of keeping all together. So when the inevitable turn happens in this movie, a lot of people were very, very against that. They're like, you just made my hero the worst person ever. Like, I forget the original, was it the writer or showrunner of the show? The studio mandated that he be on set with Brian De Palma to kind of oversee him being a consultant. But the first day they met, Brian De Palma was like, hey, man, real big fan of the show. Love what you guys did. I think if you stay here, we're just going to make each other angry because we're not doing what the show was. And the dude's like, I respect your candor. Thank you.
Yeah, I am rolling out.
Yes, as Optimus Prime would say, let us roll out.
That's interesting. I can see that. And if you want it to be a surprise that John Voight or that Jim Phelps is a villain, don't cast John Voight. Is how I feel about it. You know what I mean? Like, because I didn't remember much about this original movie.
Jim Voight's always the villain?
John Voight is just, he's because he does what the kids would say gives me the ick, I think.
Why does he give you the ick? Because the studio actually wanted to hire John Voight because they thought no one would ever suspect John Voight as the villain.
I don't have that context.
Maybe in the 90s that was a true thing to believe, but I agree with you. Like present day, like if John Voight shows up, I'm like, I bet he's probably crooked.
All I've got is context of Angelina Jolie hates him and Anaconda, you know?
You have looked into the eyes of the men he's killed?
Yeah, I have. He's just spit up, thrown up by a snake and winking at me is all I see when I see that man with a ponytail. So, but yeah, I mean, again, I really like what they did. It's a little silly, but if you look at it as almost camp, but I'm a big fan of heists, huge fan of spy thrillers and stuff. Like I watched the show Citadel, Agbo Studios, not a plug. most people think it's, you know, it's just this baseless trash. I really enjoy it just because I like that shit. You know, I like beautiful people gallivanting around the world in suits and fighting and double crossing each other. And you don't have to get that deep into it for me. So I was bound to love anything like this. And I'm a big fan of this franchise. But even this first one, I really dug it on a rewatch. So let's dive in. Danny Elfman didn't remember that I wasn't old enough to know who that was, but he does the score, not the iconic theme. That's the original theme song, right?
Which, what a banger the original theme song is.
I mean, honestly, I think the success of this franchise is like a solid 30% Tom Cruise, 30% great writing, and 40% that theme song.
Yeah.
Honestly, because what an earworm.
Have you ever turned on the theme song when you had to do chores quickly in the house?
No.
You're like,
is it effective at propelling you?
Yeah, because you're like, putting away the dishes, cleaning the counter. Now I'm going to vacuum my floors.
I will say, as a dork, throughout my entire life, whenever I'm playing, even as an adult, playing, if I'm pretending or actually sneaking in any way.
Do you do that?
I go, dun, 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 dun. Every time. And you can't stop before the horns. Yeah. It's like the bull. You're going to get them.
You can.
But yeah, Danny Elfman's score. And real quick, too, I had this weird, I wouldn't say cognitive dissonance, but like out of body experience. The most obscure video game ever came to mind while watching this movie last night. I don't know if you played it. I probably had it on Nintendo 64, but it was a Mission Impossible video game. And I remember you actually had to like choke people out, hide the bodies. And they at one point you dress up as the fireman, which they do in this movie.
Yeah. Wow. That I've not thought of this in like 30 years.
And it's probably a terrible game. But for some reason, I loved it because I didn't have a PlayStation, so I couldn't play like Metal Gear. And the idea that I was sneaking around and hiding bodies and stuff was like that's all I had was this Mission Impossible game on Nintendo. But yeah, I was like, holy shit, they've made this whole movie into the game.
Oh my God, dude, I did have this game.
And you would actually like turn into other characters
and
dress up as them and stuff with the masks. Fun times.
Wow. Dude, you were just,
core memory unlocked.
Yeah. Apparently it was fairly okay. I see a lot of 6 out of 10s.
Yeah, it was the fireman suits that like
that
brought the memories
for you?
Flooding back, and I was like, oh my dear God!
I want to look at an image. Of
oh
it.
My
Dude,
God!
The box art of that is so iconic to me because it's just the red globe with the match kind of on fire going between it. Wow. Yeah, dude, I did play the hell out of this game a lot.
Good times, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. It's N64, right?
Yep, N64.
That's right.
That
and GoldenEye.
The little phone icon in the corner. Phone. Yeah. Wow. Wow. And
it's funny watching old spy movies, too, because their super advanced tech is super ancient tech to us.
I love it when he goes and is fashioning emails.
Yeah. It's got that like when the he's like, oh my.
And then to access the internet, he has like a very special like internet access allowed or something like that. Like, that's not how the internet ever was.
Well, it's funny because a huge plot point of this movie is like hinges on the fact that internet is so slow because the main villain or Max or whatever is just trying to upload basically a Word document. And it takes so long that because she gets to the tunnel before it's finished, like nowadays the movie is like, oh, I did it.
I did it. Got it. Oh, need that file?
Whoosh. And there's a scene, not to jump ahead too much, but this is probably going to be a mess anyway because we're in a hurry. But when he pulls out the two discs, when he's doing the iconic heist scene in the vault, I thought for a second it's because he needed both of them to hold all the information and not because he was going to do the old switcheroo, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I remember those days.
When I remember like, needing two discs.
When like 6 kilobytes, you needed 4 floppies, you know?
Yep.
And I was like, wait, no, that's right. He's going to do the sleight of hand thing later. But the film opens with like a military drum roll. They're in Kiev. Kiev, and it's Emilio Estevez who plays Jack watching camera footage of an interrogation in another room. And he's like, oh, hurry up. She's been out too long, right? You don't know what's going on. He's searching for files on his own little separate laptop.
It kind of looks like he's watching like a
I thought it was
telenovela.
A TV show at first. Yeah, maybe that's the whole effect that they wanted to give you. Cause my notes, I backspaced a lot. Like he's watching a movie. Wait a second. He's really into this movie.
He's got a lot riding on this woman.
And it turned out the whole time the guy doing the interrogating was Tom Cruise in one of those elaborate face masks. And it's a giant ruse to get the name, right? They fabricated like a whole set. And the woman who's passed out or presumably dead was actually one of the agents. And they like knocked her out for that. And she could have died. So she wakes up and we get that fucking classic theme song. Those credits were wild. Were they not? The opening credits?
Yeah, they were doing it was a bunch of clips from the movie that were about some we haven't seen yet.
But yeah, it was they like would a TV like, show style credits, which is probably intentional reference to the original show.
Yeah. And then they would do like the every now and then they would do the luminance inversion where it would like make everyone's skin tones white in the background black and the irises would be blue. It would look weird. Like daytime mystery shows would do that to like, and then she was murdered and it would fade into that effect, which is kind of, I kind of miss credit sequences like this.
Yeah. I think it was homage, but since I haven't seen anything like that, maybe ever, but not in a long time, I was like, what the fuck is going on? I'm sure that's what it was. But yeah, and then I wrote the new movies are so fucking different. Wow. And then I put fucking John Voight, ew. I don't know why. I don't hate the man. But he's on the plane and a woman comes, one of the stewardesses, or flight attendants is what you call them now, comes up to ask him if he wants to watch a movie. And I wasn't alive then, but I had a weird revelation watching this movie. It's like at some point in like the 80s, when people flew like long flights, they would actually get like tapes to choose to watch movies on instead of because we have digital movies now. But yeah. I was like, oh, wow. They used to have to like choose a tape.
Perhaps you're a fan of the cinema of Ukraine.
Yeah, perhaps. And because he declines and he says the most douchey thing I've ever heard. I prefer the theater, which is maybe like agent code.
We should have known he was the villain at that
immediately.
Point. Like, oh, I prefer the theater.
Well, we're on a plane, sir. Do you want me to dance for you? Or?
Well, good news. The cast of Hamilton is in first class. You want me to get them?
Now, I'm not going to do a Lin-Manuel Miranda impersonation here. But I guess it was like agent code, like an activation sequence. I'm not sure. But she gives him the Ukrainian movie, which is, in fact, his mission, the brief. Right. So
your mission, if you choose to accept.
Yeah. And this tape will self-destruct. All that is classic. I mean, I did that as a kid all the time. I pass a note in class and be like, it will self-destruct. Mm-hmm. So this is very culturally informative for me, this movie.
Yeah, he's getting a mission from Kitteridge. There's this knock list that has a list of all their agents undercover in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like two portions of it. And there's this guy named Gallitzin who's going to try to steal it from the embassy. And their mission is to get photographic proof that Gallitzin not only steals it, but then they have to shadow him to see who he's selling the list to.
And also make sure nobody gets the actual list because that would endanger all the agents' lives.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
I put his wife, LOL, because there's a Claire is gorgeous and very young.
And maybe 50 years his junior. And
that's John Voight's wife. Sure. Hate it. Hate it.
I laughed out loud when it's like, this is my wife, Claire. I'm like, no, she's fucking not.
And he's like shitty to her too. Like, you're lucky to be with me. I'm John Voight.
I'm John Voight.
I'm Jim Phelps. And then we cut to Prague, which is where the mission takes place. He briefs them on the brief, lays out the plan. Ethan's his point man.
Oh, I'm sorry. I had to point this out as like an editor. There was a really weird edit that bothered me. Because the mission, it zooms in on the tape, like your mission will destruct. And it goes, poof, and you get the smoke rising out of the tape, right? And then there's this kind of long tracking shot where it goes from the tape smoking. It's looking at the smoking tape for a minute, tracks slowly up to John Voight's face, who just looks dead inside. And then it fades to the vista and then Prague. And as an editor, I'm just like, you could have just faded out at the smoke. That was a much more effective edit than let's look at John Voight looking bored with this scene. I don't know. Small minor gripe, but that was one of the first things I'm like, well, that was really dumb to do. I don't know why they left that.
Again, like
small nit to pick, yes.
My dad thought it was so incomprehensible, and of course I know mostly it was foggy, but I know the ending, but it's like they kind of telegraph the big twist. But again, I don't have the context of like, oh, I love Jim Phelps, you know, like this is cool. He's aged now and he's got this new team and I don't have that context. So watching it again, I was like, he's fucking obviously an asshole, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that was kind of why they lingered on him. It's like, hey, Jim Phelps, oh my God, look at this.
I'm about to
the thing is happening.
I'm about to do something I'm not going to be proud of.
The thing is happening.
There's another, what do you call it? Comparison to Fast and the Furious franchise, where the big mission of this movie, right, is over $10 million. That's really what's at stake.
Well, at the time in the 90s, man, that's like easy 40 million.
I love how small stakes this is, because now like every Mission Impossible movie is like, if we don't stop this thing, 9 billion people will die.
Yeah.
But in this movie, it's like, I really just want $10 million.
Well, and the stakes are the lives of hundreds of agents too, right?
Sure. But he's doing this for $10 million.
Yeah.
That's all he wants.
It's always the entire world that will die now, or whole countries will collapse. Mm-hmm. I like smaller stakes too. So Ethan Hunt's his point man, like his cocksure kind of leader below the leader. Claire's his wife. Jack's the hacker tech guy, Emilio Estevez's character. Who else we got? We got Hannah. I'm not really sure what she does. She does stuff.
Hannah Williams handles surveillance.
Oh, okay. Okay. Who else we got? Is that it?
You said Sarah, right? Sarah undercover. Jack's the security guy. He can hack into any security system. Hannah handles surveillance. Claire covers transport.
Yeah, she's the wheel man.
Yeah, and Hunt is the
She point waits man. In the car. She's what we call a passenger princess. Madison taught us that.
Yeah.
You'll find that out later
this
week.
You'll find that on Thursday.
But Ethan wants a cappuccino machine because Claire makes shitty coffee. You know what I'm saying? He's a funny guy. He was in Top Gun.
This is the first part where you can kind of like, if you know Tom Cruise now, this isn't him at this point, because Tom Phelps like, this is a very serious mission. We got to play it safe. Any questions? Yeah, I got a question. When are we going to get this cappuccino machine? Am I right, guys? I'm a funny guy. I'm Tom Cruise.
Before he was traumatized and grew into the man that he is today.
I still worry about Goose.
Hey, I'm trying to get over it. This is Irish coffee.
I'm trying to bury my fears with cappuccino.
And then Jack gives him the explosive bubble gum it's Chekhov's explosive bubble gum. It comes in a lot. That you push the two colors together and boom, baby, you got 5 seconds. But he's also got a
lasagna. Don't get any on you.
Mm-hmm.
Also, don't chew it.
That was a funny. I like that because the look that Tom Cruise is good, right? And that look that he gave him was like, good thing you mentioned that.
Because I mean, I'm not gonna lie.
His face is like, that would suck.
That little sticky gum bomb thing.
Look yummy.
It looks good. It looks like it would be watermelon flavored.
It looks like zebra gum.
Yeah, it looks good. I would chew that. I'm glad he definitely needed to have said that to me if I were Ethan Hunt.
Yeah, because if like the flavor fades fast on zebra gum, but it's amazing for like 6 seconds.
Yeah.
Like when he said you have about 5 seconds, I would have thought he was saying for the flavor to last. And I'd have been like, I know, right? And popped it in my mouth.
Bones. we do get a big hint here, and that is they're like, where you been staying at, Jim? Where you been staying
at? Yeah, they kind of razz him about his laid-back retirement style.
You got the first-class hotel. They putting you up in those places? And he's like, no, they put me up in the Drake Hotel, Chicago.
Chicago. Hopefully they didn't stamp that on any books or anything.
Yeah.
I'm glad I told you the exact hotel I was actually at. That won't bite me in the ass at all.
Did you need the room number?
And we also find out that Jack has a crush on Sarah, which is kind of relevant for about 10 more minutes. We cut to the party, their whole plan, like their big plan to catch Galitzin. Jack prepares to hack at the elevator shaft. And we get a weird, speaking of like camera stuff that you might have noticed, De Palma likes to do these like POV shots from Ethan's point of view.
Yeah, it is.
Which the first time it makes sense because Ethan's in disguise. He's like the senator. And when you cut to him, it's like, oh, it's Tom Cruise, but it ain't.
it's Tom Cruise in old person makeup.
But the second time we get the POV from Ethan, it's just him as Ethan. So it's an interesting choice.
Yeah.
But it's Ethan / Walter.
There was a funny thing where they're like, who am I going to be today? And they're like, oh, this guy. And like, oh, we got this guy. That's weird. But we don't know who that is. But then it transitions to like some sort of political talk
show. The
TV
interview with the senator. Yeah.
And there's this guy who's like, how could you think of such things politically? And it cuts to Tom Cruise in old person makeup. Like, I thought this was America.
Yeah. Because that way we don't have to pay another actor and then do the whole face thing.
Yeah. And also like we can't, the technology isn't there for us to convincingly do this without makeup.
We don't need to. We'll just film the first time as Tom Cruise. Mm-hmm. But they see Galitzin at the party, and then we've got like infrared glasses and like a cool spray marker thing, which I kind of liked that.
Now, did they spray him just so she can track him easier? Was that?
Yeah.
That was
so you could see him in a crowd.
Yeah.
And you have to do that in a video game. By the way,
fuck, you're right.
It was nice.
We're going to have to play this. That. Yeah. Let's put it on right now. Do you want to stop recording?
Yeah. Jack almost gets hit by the elevator and he has to like jump into the, you know, squeeze into like the little cleft there in the shaft. Wow. That sounded sexual. Mm. And they start razzing Jack about being slow on the hack.
Do you have an employee named Jack? I did. He was quite unreliable and constantly late.
Hold your horses, Foghorn. I'm almost there. A little Foghorn Leghorn reference.
I did like there was a cool shot where it was kind of shot the characters parallel outside the elevator doors, but you can see the elevator and the camera tracks the elevator.
Yeah.
Going up.
I like all the elevator stuff.
Yeah. That was a really cool.
Honestly,
shot.
I'll tell you later, but this movie works for me. And there's a specific part where I made note of it. And then it's a kind of a weird moment where Ethan rescinds the date with Sarah that he set Jack up, but Sarah's right there. And I thought that was a weird, that's what he said, right? Like you could forget about that date with Sarah because he was late on hacking the system. It made him almost get caught. Mm-hmm. But it's like, does Sarah have a say?
Yeah.
What the fuck is going on right now?
Yeah, it's super weird.
You could forget about being with Sarah all night. Yeah. Plans off, Sarah. You don't have to do that now. It's just weird.
I just did you a solid.
But she actually likes Jack. But then they set the glasses up while they're in the office to be the camera for the computer to catch Galitzin in the act while they're doing that. So we get early information that glasses can be cameras throughout this whole sequence here, which is useful for later. And then Jim has to open up the doors for Ethan and Sarah. And this is where I think they telegraphed his villainy, because he's a better hacker than Jack for some reason. Like he's able to do what Jack's not able to do and open the elevator doors for Ethan and Sarah. Right. Mm-hmm. And there's a floppy disk. Thought that was interesting. Damn, deep cut there. I have a note that says nice and lonely ass. I think it's something Jack says, that his ass is nice and lonely. I'm not sure. I did write that. And then Ethan rips his face off again. Love doing that in this movie. They record Galitzin getting the info, and the elevator starts to move because Galitzin's calling it. And then I put Jim's being real sus because
he's just There's like a band of light across his eyes, but he's in the shadows and he's typing away. Yeah,
he's lit in a villainous way where they just showed that he has the power to move the elevator and stuff. And all of a sudden, Jack, who couldn't hack before, is unable to stop himself from being impaled. So I'm like, damn, they really telegraphed this. I actually like how explicit that was. I was surprised.
Yeah, so this is a weird touchstone in my childhood where this kill of Emilio Estevez getting smashed in the face.
Because I loved Emilio at the time,
too. I don't even know what those things are.
I guess that's how the elevators...
spiky things.
I think they catch them and hold them from falling, I guess.
Maybe. Yeah, but like that shot of his face getting squished in, for some reason, like... I remember that so viscerally.
Burned in your brain.
Like, that was awful. Yeah. Oh, I don't like it. But I do like the studio wanted to hire Emilio Estevez for this role specifically because he was probably like one of the bigger stars in the movie.
That and like very beloved.
Very beloved. And
so it was painful to watch.
And so it was like surprising that he would die so early in the movie because it's Emilio Estevez. Why would that happen?
Like the lost thing, but in actuality. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then Gallitzin rolls out. And, you know, we get that whole man down, Ethan. It's very sad. And we cut to Jim Phelps running up. Like, he's, I'm stay there. I'm coming. I'm coming. I'm a fast runner. I'm John Voight. And then when he's like, wait, I got a shadow. So he's setting them all up, right? But abort, abort. But Ethan's like, we're not aborting. We got to get that list. So he tells Sarah to keep an eye on the package, keep shadowing him. I guess he's going to run up and help Jim was his whole plan. And then Claire sees Ethan walking by. She's just sitting in the car because that's her job. But she sees him going rogue. And then Ethan sees a silencer go off on Jim because they got cameras through each other's glasses on their watch. Which, by the way, the watch TV screens, the early Apple Watch.
Very nice.
Early Apple Watch. That's very impressive.
Yeah. My Apple Watch today can't.
Jim's like, I'm coming and I got 10,000 steps already today. And they're like, what? Nothing. I'll explain it later.
Sorry. I've got a goal.
I got to close my my fitness ring.
Didn't we have that conversation as a team? We're trying to outpace each other on steps for the day.
God damn it. Are you wearing your watch or not?
Shit.
And then he falls in the river. He gets shot. So Ethan thinks he sees Jim get assassinated by a silenced pistol. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's on his Apple iWatch. That's not what it's called. Now Ethan wants Sarah to abort. He's like, actually, do abort. Shit's escalating quickly.
JK.
But she can't hear it because he said, hey, radio silencers. I guess he cut off communications right before he died or pretended to die. And by the way, I put it's lit so well because I do like the noir lighting of this sequence. This is very De Palma-esque. Yeah. I like everything going on here lighting-wise a lot.
Yeah, you don't know what's going on. They're in the dark just as much as we are.
It's just sexy. It's cool, you know? Like when you see, when it cuts to Sarah and he's trying to get her to stop and you know she's about to die, like it's almost like Rodriguez's Sin City. Like it's almost black and white. It's so dark. But like her lipstick is bright red and it just looks fucking cool. I don't know if that means that they did it day for night or something, but I really liked it.
Yeah, I don't think so. This looks like it was.
Well, usually that blueness is day for night, right?
It is, but that's a digital thing.
Yeah,
and so true. That wouldn't have been done on here.
That's true.
Yeah.
This film, baby. Mm-hmm. And the car blows up that we saw Claire in as soon as Hannah gets into it. So that's like, oh, no, they both died, we think, right?
Oh, no.
And then Sarah watches Gallitzin get grabbed and killed.
He's just getting stabby-stabbed through a fence.
I don't understand how she let herself be killed as a trained agent.
I also don't either.
He, like, grabbed her through the fence. Like, yeah, good thing you didn't move. I got you, too.
Got you, too. Ha-ha.
But she gets stabbed as well. And then the Polizei show up. I don't know how you pronounce that.
Polizei?
Is that? That's German.
That's German, yeah.
I don't know. The police show up on boats. And while Ethan's there cradling Sarah's body. And I thought cool. I felt like a super secret agent, Steve, because I was like, that guy had an earpiece. I noticed.
You did.
All the stuff that Ethan notices later. Mm. Well, not all of it, but that guy with the earpiece, I noticed that.
Was that the drunk dude?
Couple?
Yeah. I picked up on the drunk couple. There's a couple.
You clocked him too?
Yeah. There's a couple other people that he names that I did not clock, but I definitely clocked the drunk couple.
No, like the waiter behind Hannah. There's no way to catch that guy.
Yeah. I love when they show the flashback of the waiter. It's literally just a guy looking at her and then looking away.
Yeah, but that's sus. Yeah, mind so your sus. Business, waiter.
Sir. Help. When you're the help, you don't look into
don't
the other
that.
People's eyes. Mm-mm. You keep your eyes on the ground.
No
okay?
way, sir.
Better seen, not heard.
Get out of here. Yeah.
Chris Scott Thomas, the woman who plays Sarah, said, I die on page 25, but I die in the arms of Tom Cruise, so it's worth it.
It's a quote?
Yeah, it's a quote. She has.
Okay.
Which, I get it.
Yeah, same.
He's an attractive short king.
I also got paid $72,000.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, of course, that's fine. What do you mean? You got work. She dies in Tom Cruise's arms. And then when the police show up, he climbs over the fence and runs in the direction of the killer as well. I get there's a scene where he like rigs up a payphone. I don't know what he's doing there. I guess
he's making it so he can't trace. I think so.
Bravo Echo 1-1. And he asks for a Kittredge, who's like the head of the CIA or the IMF or whatever, which I think is like a pretend branch of the CIA. Mm-hmm. And he tells him, my team is dead.
You saying the impossible mission force is a made up thing in the government? The IMF impossible mission force?
I guess. We don't know, do we? It seems like you're just naive, Steve.
That's true. I don't know how the world works.
Have you seen the dollar?
The like with the E pluribus unum on the back?
Yeah. And there's an eyeball. It's a whole thing I'll show you later. Okay. You fold it a certain way.
Let me know about that eyeball pyramid.
He says, my team is dead. And then Kittredge says, location green. I'll be there myself. And he's like, you're in Prague? Which is weird. But he goes anyway, right? Meet me there in an hour. So he goes to this awesome aquarium restaurant, which is, I really wanted to eat there.
Mostly windows.
Well, aquariums.
Well, like the exterior even is just mostly window.
Yeah.
It's kind of like.
It's very neat. Yeah. I like the architecture. I would like to dine there.
Very chic, very hip, very modern.
Kittredge is there and he's like, hey, I know how much Jim meant to you. So we get this exposition about how close they were emotionally, if we didn't catch that earlier, which we didn't really. And he gives him exfil plans, stands for exfiltration. It means get him out of there, Steve.
Oh, thank you. I needed that.
Yeah, I don't mean to sound condescending. That's like talk down to people. And then she gives him plans and a passport. And all of a sudden, Ethan's onto him there. He's like, why was there another team, right? So he goes through all the people, like the drunk couple. He clocked them all. The waiter.
Bow tie at 12 o'clock.
Yeah, bow tie. And then everybody in the restaurant with him now as well, right? So it shows how good Ethan is at his job, which I really like that scene. And then all of a sudden, Kittredge is like, all right, bullshit's over. It was another IMF team. And basically, this was a mole hunt. It was a fake job. There's a check known as Max. Kittredge thinks Ethan is corrupt, essentially. He thinks he's the mole. You're the only one who survived. Like you said, you have to be the asshole.
Yeah. Your parents are rich now, suddenly, out of nowhere. Interesting.
And the whole Max search has been called Job 314. So this was a fake operation. Your father's farm has money now. All of a sudden, that's super sus. But Ethan, getting angry, he pulls the bomb gum out. Boom. Poor fishies. Can we just talk about the fishies that didn't do anything wrong?
Yeah.
Now they're just strewn about the streets of Prague for no reason.
Suffocating. There are a couple of innocents in this movie whose lives are destroyed.
Dozens of fish.
Dozens of fish, for sure.
Mm-hmm. The most innocent. And then he runs.
I thought the scene was so funny because he throws the gum on the fish tank.
Mm-hmm.
Is Kittredge the one who gets shit blasted out of the restaurant?
I didn't notice.
Because there's a person where the gum hits the glass. This tiny explosion initially goes off, but the person that's maybe 10 feet away from it gets fucking rocketed out of the fucking building.
I saw somebody. I don't think it was Kittredge. I think it was one of the other agents.
Okay, yeah. This poor guy just...
Kittredge kind of ducked and covered because he knows what Ethan's capable of.
Okay, I couldn't tell like with who exactly that was. But yeah, some poor dude gets shit launched out of this restaurant from the smallest explosion ever. On movies, it was really funny, but the waterfall, there's a lot of water in that aquarium.
Yeah, because it was like it blew up, it broke all the glass, which was the real distraction and damage, not just the explosion itself.
Oh yeah,
but I loved the dynamic of, I don't know what Ethan's doing, but I know what he's capable of, and he seems really confident. So I'm going to hunker down. You know what I mean? Like, that's what Kittredge is like. I don't know what's going on, but oh my God. You know, I like that about it.
This seems like the best idea.
Yeah, I like that about it. But yeah, he runs off.
But he goes back to the crow's nest, their HQ, which.
Yeah.
Is that a good idea?
Well, he's got to get what he thinks is money there. And he's got all of his other identity passports that he has to in order to make a run for it.
Wouldn't Kittredge know that, where their HQ is?
Maybe not, because that was like a. Probably not. It's probably like protocol to keep that as limited as possible, right? For leaks and safety. So like Jim knows, team knows, he knows they're in Prague, but he doesn't know where they're like a little, because later on, Jim's like, oh, I knew you'd be at the Liverpool.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hotels. And he's like, yeah, I showed you those. You know, because it's like a, they can choose where they're at on these ops.
That's true, because Jim has that thing towards the end where he's like, I ran the country on my own, basically.
Right? I didn't think I'd be in the position of defending MI1 this whole time from like any criticism, but I'm liking this like tennis game because it's not super defensible, but I'm trying like a motherfucker and it's going well.
I think you're doing a great job. I'm merely just asking questions.
No, they need to be asked.
I'm just asking questions.
So yeah, he goes back to the headquarters. He pulls up a hidden gun out of the thing. He like lays broken glass alarms outside the apartment, right? That's a good move with the light bulbs there. Starts packing up his shit. Can't find the money. He's getting upset. Washes the literal blood off his hands. A little on the nose there. And searching for job 314 on this old school computer.
It's like, on internet link.
He's like, job 314. Dang.
Man, no searches on the internet for that.
Max, secret agent. No results. Pornhub. No, not now. And then later. But then he pulls out the Bible because he had that thought.
No, it's that thing that movies do where they're at a computer. Ah, I can't solve it. And then you just look forward and the thing you see just beyond your line of sight is the answer. And so he looks up and he sees the Holy Bible.
It's not Job. Thinks, it's Job.
It's Job.
Holy shit.
It's Job Bluth from Arrested Development.
And thank God this Bible was brought here. Like this apartment didn't have a Bible.
No.
Jim brought this Bible from the hotel.
Bible. Yeah. Why did he bring the hotel Bible with him?
From Chicago to Prague.
Was he in the Chicago hotel? Like,
where else is he going to find a Bible if he needs to send secret messages, Steve?
He started reading the Bible. He was like, this is a really good book.
I got to finish it.
I got to know how this ends. You know what? The book says I shouldn't steal, but I'm not going to miss it.
I'm already going to murder. Fuck it.
I'm going to proudly display it on the bookshelf.
And I'm going to put it on the shelf. Of
our temporary HQ.
It makes no sense. Why did he bring that from Chicago and then put it on the shelf in Prague? And then why did Ethan take it? Like, none of them are confident they're going to be able to find another Bible. What if it's not King James Version?
Now I'm thinking of Jim being this guy that's like, all right, we're going to have a really hard mission tomorrow. Everybody get ready. These are your roles. But also, I really think it would be great if you guys just read a couple passages.
Just center yourself.
You know, it really just makes me feel good about life knowing that the big guy's up there looking out over us.
Let there be light. That's what I always say. He like starts to quote it, but like not in a good way. Like, that, how's that apply to the situation? I don't know, man.
Job 3:14 says, love thy neighbor. Austin 3:16
I was
going to
say
it,
Austin 3:16.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah. I tell you what, when I think the mission's not doable, Stone Cold Steve Austin's going to walk down 3:16 Gimmick Street and stomp a mud hole in Jim Phelps' ass.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
He sends a warning message to Max. He's trying to establish a relationship there using the Job 3:14 lingo. And then he sends it in German. And this is the only scene I actively hated. He sent, I think, two emails, one in German, auf Deutsch, for no reason. But there's like a montage of him typing for so long that he's falling asleep. And I don't understand what else he was doing.
I think,
would he get lost in a Wikipedia wormhole, which we are apt to do.
We've all done that. No, I think what he was doing is he doesn't actually know what Max's email is. So he's cold emailing anybody who could match that, any email he can think of, with the hopes that one of them will be the real Max, realize what he's saying, and then respond in kind with whatever that lingo that
he's sending. back then there was probably only a few thousand email addresses, you know?
Yeah, there was Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan's email from You've Got Mail.
It's it. Yeah.
They surely got this email.
They did.
I don't know what this means.
He sent back a Godfather quote. Like, is this the game we're playing, motherfucker? As a deep You've Got Mail reference, I hope Enza appreciated.
Just Enza.
I know for sure that she got it. That's all I'm saying. Yeah, so he's falling. So he's a sleepy boy. And then he sees, he hears the glass crunching, right? And then it's Jim. But wait, it's Dream Jim. It's a nightmare. It's actually Claire. Ah, he doesn't trust her. He slings her across the room. And then there's this, I kind of like the scene, honestly. It's a little silly, but like he throws her on the bed. It's like romantic, but also violent and not at all. And she's scared. And he's like, why are you alive? And why did you wait so long to come back here? And it's kind of comical because she's like, that was the plan. If we abort,
yeah, we
I wait till 4.
4, yeah.
4 a.m. 0400. 4 a.m. 4 o'clock.
It's 4 a.m. 0400.
It's 4.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, yeah.
I live my life every day as like Blake Maisland says. 4-4-4-4-4-4-4. Call Blake Maisland.
I thought
now.
You were going to say a quarter mile at a time.
My life. Yeah. Well, yeah, that too.
Doesn't matter if you win by an inch or a mile, Steve.
Yeah. I was a huge fan of the scene. I really don't like the dynamic they put between Ethan and Claire. It's too, there's already the weird wrinkle that she's Jim's wife, which
you don't
is
think if you're
fucking
a,
weird.
If you're a beautiful super spy married to John Voight, you don't think you're going to fall for Tom Cruise?
Oh, I don't.
Because you are.
Sure. Yes.
I don't care how short he is.
I can understand falling in love with a specimen that looks like that. Sure.
He's like, we got to get rid of your Thetans. Other than that, you're a great gal.
Also, some people are going to follow you the rest of your life. no, I just think the way they kind of go about presenting it is weird. Like her, if we are to believe that she is actually John Voight's husband and John Voight is Ethan Hunt's like role model mentor, way that they immediately are like, if it wasn't for the fact that the government wants us, we would be fucking so hard right now. Like, that's the energy that this scene has.
Sure. I like that kind of energy.
But I don't think it fits the context very well. Like, it would be a completely different movie and maybe even a better movie if it was a drama about two people who love someone, they pass away, and now they're like, but we want to fuck.
You know what makes me horny, Steve?
What?
International intrigue. Danger.
Ooh. I can't disavow that.
It's the next morning and, you know, Ethan's saying, hey, they think I killed everyone else. Right. So they can't know that you're alive. And also they're going to assume you're with me if they find out you are alive. Right. So he's worried about the $100K that was dumped in his father's bank account. His plan is to get Max the actual list. And then the real mole, if he knows he has the list, we'll find him because there's no way for me to find the mole. I'm going to make him find me. Mm-hmm. And Claire, you're going to be assumed to be with me, right?
Solid.
She's like,
plan.
Why don't I just come out and say you're cool? You know, he's like, that's not going to work. And then, yeah, he gets a message from Max for Job that Max wants to meet. He's like, ooh, we're in there, baby. So he has to go to the guy on the bench and ask for a match. So he goes up to Fabio and he's like, can I get a match?
I love the dude from Die Hard lighting the match.
Like, it is him, right?
I don't know if that's 100% him, but it looks just like him.
It does. Not.
I love how he asks him for a match. And this is the point of view shot that you're talking about, right?
Yes.
And the guy just lights a match and then a car just fucking like peels out like, oh, the match is lit.
What if he got bored and wanted a smoke? Oh, it's false alarm.
Oh, false alarm, guys. I just needed a ciggy.
Oops.
Go around the block. We will do it again.
Oops.
That's on me. That is my bad. Oh, shit. He's actually here. Lights the match. We will have to blindfold you. You can't know where Max lives.
But don't worry. I sold you this pretty much.
It's got little buttons on it.
You will love it.
It's a silly little mask.
We thought it would be funny if you look silly.
They put effort into making that.
Somebody sewed that.
It's what I do when I'm waiting for people to come ask me for a light.
Because I can't smoke.
So I just make the mask. That is what they call in Germany two birds. One stone.
Mm-hmm. Where are we at here? I lost my notes.
If Max doesn't like what you have to say, you will vet indefinitely.
He said, I'll take that risk, which is not. That response doesn't make sense because the guy, let me break it down for you. Let me take the mask off. I want to see Max. You can't see Mask. And in fact, I don't think you're aware of how serious this is. You can't see Max. You can't see Max. And in fact, Max might kill you if she don't like what you have to say. I'll take that risk. Damn, got me there. Takes off the hood. What the fuck?
Oh, you have hoodwinked me. I have been bamboozled.
Honestly, I just like how you look in the mask.
Actually, I just
I
feel
worked
bad.
So hard on it.
I feel bad standing next to you because you are so sexy looking and it makes me feel self-confident about myself.
But, oh, plot twist. Max is a woman. 1996. Ba-ba. What?
Women can be gangsters too.
He wants $150,000, and he's very cocksure about this. And in fact, Max likes him pretty much immediately because he's Tom Cruise. And he reveals to her that he's not Job, which they suspected. And he says, I'm a disavowed knock, right? And then his whole plan is pretty enticing to Max. I love the dialogue in this scene. I really do. I think the interplay and the back and forth is very, very well done.
I think the woman who plays Max and Tom Cruise have very good chemistry.
So you think they have the best chemistry?
Oh, yeah. I would. I want them to get down.
You do?
Yeah.
You want Max and Ethan to get down?
Oh, yeah. They can talk about all the knock lists they want.
Knock boots.
Give me a name.
Give me a name.
And is it just me? Were you feeling it?
I know that she's really into him. I don't know if it's reciprocated.
Well, he can't be into her because, you know, he's got a vendetta. He doesn't want to work outside the law.
Yeah, he's too busy to explore those feelings. But I get what you're saying.
The faux charm he's putting on. Mm-hmm. I felt it.
I'm with you, though. I love this back and forth. This has got to be David Koepp dialogue because he's saying, you know, hey, the disc that you've been given is a decoy. It's going to bring the agents here as soon as you boot it up, which takes a while because you're on dial-up internet. But hopefully you paid your AOL subscription. Actually, I've got like a bunch of these discs that'll give you 30 days free of AOL. That's how I can help you.
Yeah.
Oh, remember those? Nope.
Yeah, I do. I will go stand on the balcony and see if I can see the coppers coming.
Nope. All clear.
All good.
Even totally missed all the guys rolling up, right?
Yeah, wunderbar.
But she says something. I'm not going to say it as articulately as she does, but she says basically like, you say that the disc is going to bring the cops here and I can't test that theory without potentially bringing the cops here. Very convenient for you, right? Like it's very clever. I like all of this. But eventually they decide they find a way to test it. You think they're about to get busted because Kittredge and the guys roll in, but everybody had dipped already, right?
They're all wearing like white lab coats and shit.
Yeah.
Kind of odd.
Kittredge is like, these guys are trained to be ghosts. We taught them.
We trained them that way.
Let's make him come to us because we know his uncle and his mom. He loves him. Mm-hmm. He's a mama's boy.
You got to find what he loves and squeeze him.
And you cut to the mother going, stop squeezing me. It's a weird scene.
You're hurting me. You're hugging too tight.
I thought this was a hug. And then we cut to fucking Gunther will never let me have one of his apartments again. But she's so happy because she's like, oh, the handsome man is also telling me the truth. Mm. He's useful. Mm. You are a good sport. Like she's into it, right? And Job was trying to get $6 million. That's what he was going to get for this offer. Ethan says he wants 10. I want 10.
I want 10.
And he's playing the part of somebody because he's like, if I was really a crooked person trying to fill Job's shoes, I would ask for more. Mm-hmm. He's smart like that, right? But I also want Job at the exchange. And she likes Ethan, like I said. Mm-hmm. But if he needs $150K up front to, you know,
to fund the operation.
Fund the operation. Yeah. So we cut.
They're flying across countries several times throughout this movie. That shit adds up.
Plus, I like my movies on my flights. The in-flight films are expensive.
Yeah, I love the Ukraine cinema. And they got those tapes.
I've only got 20 Sig Sauer bullets. And I like the sour ones.
Those are the best.
We cut back to him and Claire. They do it. She's doing an inventory check and he's like, hey, what are you doing checking inventory? You trying to party? And she's like, it's like you said, I'm with you if I'm not dead. And then he's like, we're going to need help though. So he wants to recruit help from other disavowed folks. And he's able to use the IMF mainframe to find the addresses of disavowed folks.
And listeners, if you've never seen these movies before, get used to Ethan Hunt being disavowed.
Yes. It's the shtick.
It happens a lot.
He's a loose cannon. Mm-hmm. All right. It's like the give me your gun and your badge captain thing. It's part of the genre. When we cut to fucking Ving Rhames and was it Jean Reno?
Jean Reno?
Or it's Gene Reno if you're from America.
I love him.
Gene Reno.
I wish he was in more shit.
He's great. Yeah. He's great. And love Ving Rhames.
Same with Ving Rhames. I wish Ving Rhames was in more shit.
Yeah. Oh, I almost said it. My tick thing. 100%.
100%.
100%. And he wants to use them to break into the IMF mainframe in Langley. That's his off-the-wall idea.
Top of Mount Everest for hackers, man.
Yeah, because he's Luther Stickle, the Net Ranger. And Franz is the other guy.
He hacked the NATO Ghostcom. And live to tell the tale.
I'm not going to admit that I did that, but what a hell of a job that was. Whoever did that was awesome. Probably has a huge wiener.
Yeah, definitely.
And he's like, it was you. I know. And then Franz is like the helicopter guy. I don't even know what use he can be because he fucks up the whole mission and turns out to be dirty. But
Franz?
Yeah, Franz.
Okay. I guess that is his name. I have him as Krieger in my notes.
It's Franz
name.
Krieger.
Yeah. I totally just did not pick up his first name was Franz.
Yeah, I'm Franz. From France.
That's how Jean Reno sounds.
I'm France. France from France. And then, but Ethan's like, no, relax. It's much worse than you think. The terminal's in a black vault behind voice, retina, and double electronic key card security. And once inside, there's sound sensitivity, temperature sensitivity, and pressure sensitivity alarms, all protected by a laser protected duct is the only way into it. Yeah, that's it. That's all we got to do is get through all that, guys. Mm-hmm. And we cut to Langley. We see firemen going in because Luther's.
Before we go in and talk about this heist, what we need to do is talk about the opposite of a heist. People who give us things, people who support us, the super patrons for the month of June. Guys,
without whom the mission would truly be impossible.
We would not be able to accept them and it would just be destroyed without us accepting it.
Yeah.
So these are patrons who have gone onto patreon.com/dreamingthings and have supported the show at the highest tiers possible. And we like to give them a shout out every episode. You ready for the shout out?
Shout it on out.
Do you want to read it this time?
These are the things we couldn't do without. So come on.
I'm talking to you. Just a copper pot.
Yeah. We can't sing the whole thing. Yeah. We got Stanton Valentino.
Love him.
We got Svento 7.
Love
we got Jaron Bowers.
Yeah.
We got Jenny. We got AK, Ashley Ray, Alan Tomlinson, Wendy O'Loughlin, Jason Hawkins, Trey Barrera, Conrad, David Malfara, Kaylee Sampson, Rabbit Dog in a Barbie car.
Best name.
Jose Ruben Cruz Rodriguez, Alexis Adler, Thomas Alexander, Emmy, Jovales, Valerie, Aaron Layton, John Collins, Amanda King, Sun Loving Mortal, Andrew Gray, Jadinklage Morgoon, Jen Robinson, Kate, Chloe Richardson, Kalisha Reeves, Kiki Newton, Kevin Strother, Jeanette Murphy, Casey McCain, and Enza.
Oh, so thank you guys for keeping the light on. And thank you for all the other patrons who are at lower tiers who also support us every
Jake
single
the Snake.
Jake the Snake Roberts is a supporter of us?
Jake the Snake is a supporter.
That's pretty dope.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh my God.
We appreciate your
thanks, Jake.
Your patronage and sacrifice in the squared circle.
Please throw Damien on me, Jake. That was his snake's name.
But in Langley, we see firemen going in because Luther's setting off the alarms. That's their big plan. Kittredge is trying to figure out where in the world Ethan Hunt is. He's like Carmen Sandiego. Little does he know he's in the building robbing him blind right now. Claire, by the way, at this point, it occurred to me Claire doesn't seem sad about her husband. And I wouldn't be either, but also it's because she knows he's alive. Right.
Right.
And I put, ooh, Ethan and Franz were fire boys the whole time. We didn't know.
Mm.
He stops Krieger from killing the guy because he's not interested in killing innocent IMF agents.
Because he's a good dude.
He's a good dude. Right. And then Claire squirts pin juice into some guy's coffee. And it's the guy who we saw is the only one allowed in the vault from earlier.
And William Donilo.
Yeah, William Donilo. He's very okay with her sitting uncomfortably close at an empty bench in the cafeteria, but like she's a beautiful woman. Maybe that's what they're saying. Like,
I mean, what are you gonna do?
What are you gonna do?
Even if she wasn't a beautiful woman, like, what are you gonna do if you're sitting there and someone just sits uncomfortably close to you? Do you make that?
You want some Cheez-Its?
Do you do the obvious? Passive aggressive rebuke of that person by just getting up and walking away.
Yeah, I would maybe pretend to pee or something, and then just go eat my lunch
or,
in my office.
Or you could do the very aggressive thing and go, can you move?
Just to be clear, I would not pretend to pee in the cafeteria. I would go to the bathroom. I would leave.
Now, Chris, now I know you're lying.
Psst, I'm just standing there. That's my move.
This is what happens when people get uncomfortably close to me. It's a defense mechanism. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. So she squirts the pin juice. And
every time. I don't like it.
And then I put suction cup climby boy, which is one of those iconic scenes. You ever want to climb a wall with those things? Because I do.
Constantly.
They look like perfect push-ups, but that stick to things.
Yeah.
I want them badly.
They look like fun.
They do. Claire, I don't know if I have the upper body strength, but I want to try it. Claire puts a tracker patch on Coffee Boy, and we see his transponder beacon kind of light up on Luther's end of things. And then Ethan and Franz get to the laser duct, and they've got this really cool, like one of the coolest pieces of tech in the movie, I think, is the magnet screw gun thing. It comes through the duct and then they easily block the lasers. They get through this like ridiculous amount of security pretty easily, actually. And if Franz wasn't a fuck up, it would have gone without a hitch.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting.
Krieger's terrible at his job.
He's very bad.
He's awful.
And he uses the same knives to stab everybody on every mission, apparently.
Hey, man, that's a quality brand.
Once you find a style you like.
That's a brand he trusts, right?
I like this one for stabbing. And then Franz sneezes like a doof. And he's like, don't do that anymore because there's sound sensitivity. He's like, I got you. I'm just allergic to ducks.
Quack. I get it, though. It's dusty up there.
And then
I like the duck noise. I'm not gonna bulldoze through that. That was a quality duck joke.
It was an Emilio Estevez reference, too, in a way. Like,
yeah, quack, quack, quack.
Ethan being lowered in. William Dunlow's on his way, but he's getting the bubble guts from that pin juice, baby. And he's
bubble gut pin juice.
He comes into the vault.
The latest boba tea flavor that's coming out near you.
He comes into the vault, vomits into the trash can. And the only thing they don't have in this vault by way of security is cameras, apparently. Which would have...
Yeah. When you go the extra mile of making, like, pressure sensitivity,
kind of weird
sensitivity, it's weird that you wouldn't have cameras in, too.
What if they didn't know that they had cameras and there's people just watching Ethan being lowered time. In? Like, the fuck is he doing?
Yeah, they're in the ducks. Yeah, put it... This is a good point.
I never thought about this watching this movie until
that would be the least that wouldn't cost them shit.
No,
compared to everything else they're
you
doing.
You know, for $40, we could have had a lot more effective security.
We could add some more cameras. We can't go over budget.
Mm-mm.
But these are just cameras. It's $40. We can't go a single dollar over budget, sir.
We blew the whole load on the floor. In retrospect, a little too much.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But drops of water, they fall on that floor. We know, baby. How's that helpful?
That alarm has to go off constantly because they show the condensation of that dude's cup drops on the ground and it sets the alarm. That has to happen all the time.
Well, if that guy, William, they're like, William, it's the third time this week you've left a cup in there. I'm sorry. You're going to be out of shit canned happens again.
That's why they fired him unceremoniously after this. It wasn't just because he got duped. It's because they were just like, finally, I have a reason to get rid of this dude.
And that one poor guy that just overheard that Ethan broke into the IMF, got sent to Alaska.
Yeah.
This place sucks. But he leaves.
Send his clothes.
And he goes to go throw up in the bathroom. Ethan gets lowered down again, starts hacking in. And Franz is already straining, right? They should have used a better. Can't stress enough that he sucks. Luther sees that he's taking the knock list.
It's such an iconic shot, though.
It is.
Tom Cruise.
The tension in this whole sequence is immaculate.
Yeah.
It's well done.
This is the best sequence in the whole movie.
Iconic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Tom Cruise on the floor, baby. And Luther sees that what they're stealing is the knock list. And he's like, oh my God, if he's wearing glasses, he would have taken them off. A rat starts to approach Franz, which reminded me of his character in Wanted. He's the rat guy.
Yeah, that's true.
He puts bombs on him.
That's a movie I haven't thought of in a long time.
Ethan has multiple discs and I probably can't hold the whole Word file on there. And Franz slips. And does the iconic drop on Ethan where he has to like stop right above the floor, like a hair above the floor.
Well, he slips because he goes to kill the rat.
Yeah.
Because the rat slowly, you know, he's just being a rat. He's squeaking.
He's being doing little rat squeak, things. Squeak.
Hey, friend, what you guys doing up here? Don't see many people like you up here in the ducks.
You crawl around up here too?
Oh my goodness. I'm just going to come over and help you out, give you a little.
Dead. Like, and Krieger is a dude that stabs people to death.
Yeah.
He's talented enough to fly a helicopter in a train tunnel. He has some skills, right?
Sure.
I love the idea. He's like, oh my God, is that a fucking rat? Oh no.
Everybody has their thing.
Oh, get that thing away from me.
He should have just counted to five, let the fear in, and then moved on with the job.
I wish he would have done like, ee!
That's what he did do. He does like this. Oh,
move. But it is kind of impressive that he's able to let go of the rope.
And I guess catch it.
Punch the rat. And then catch the rope again.
Just let the rat know who's boss.
They don't show him kill the rat. But
I thought he just flailed to like shoo it and, you know.
Well, it's dead behind him.
I guess he killed it. Yeah. Or knocked out. Maybe it's unconscious.
I assume he like let go of the rope and then did like a bonk, like bonked it real hard.
Maybe he stabbed it because he's got the knife out later.
True.
He's quick with that blade.
But I don't think he would be quick enough to like let go, pull out, knife, stab.
Oh, he's quick.
Okay.
He was quick enough to get Sarah through the gate, and she's a trained agent. Think about that.
That's true.
What if that was, he was just trying to teach him how to cook, that rat?
He's like, hey, buddy.
If you let me pull on your hair, I can pull this rope up for you.
Maybe if he let the rat control him, he could have survived the train sequence.
We don't know.
Because that rat just wanted to be an ace helicopter pilot.
We don't know. Mm-hmm. In fact, maybe he wasn't a double agent. Maybe the rat did take control, and that's why.
That's why. Oh, I like this theory. He was assimilated by the Rat King.
But while he's down there, Ethan's right above the floor. The heat starts rising. He starts to sweat. We know what tiny drops of lubrication can do in that room, damn it. And Will goes back to puke again. We cut back and forth. The sweat's dripping down Ethan's face. He catches it in his gloved palm in that iconic shot. I don't know how he had the room to maneuver that arm, but he did it, baby. And by the way, apparently Tom Cruise's forehead kept hitting the floor when they were trying to shoot this scene.
Jesus, ow.
So he weighted his shoes with coins because he's actually balancing on that like contraption that they had there. And he put a little more weight in his feet and he was able to stay above the floor without touching any part of it on camera.
That's pretty smart.
But the rope is making noise. It's going to set off the noise alarm. And then right as Ethan almost gets back into the duct, Franz drops his knife. And it stabs into the table. But luckily, William's coming into the room, so it doesn't set off an alarm. But William's very confused by the knife protruding from his desk because he's the only one allowed in that room. And he looks up at the vent and goes, oh, my God.
Oh, my God. It's the knock list.
And then Ethan does the smoke in the vents move to get everybody to be rushed out by the firemen. And then you put their fireman outfits back on.
Did Krieger call him messy?
What do you mean?
So when a little bit before this, when he pulls Tom Cruise up,
sure,
like right before he drops his knife, does he like look at you and go messy, almost as to call Tom Cruise like you're sloppy?
No, you silly boy.
What did he say?
He's French. He said merci.
did Ethan say thank you?
No, that's he was saying. I don't know why he said thank you actually, but. He definitely says thank you. I think it's because he was tired of holding him.
Okay. All right. I thought it was just another wrinkle of like, man, this Krieger's a douche because he's like sloppy. Like,
yeah, you fucked that up. I did great.
I'm killing it up here.
Look at this rat I killed. Fuck that guy.
I held your bitch ass and I killed a rat. All right.
Merci.
I'm two for two. Okay. I'm glad you're here.
I brought a baguette for us to snack. Because... French wine is too rich for English bellies. Any hoozle. Kittredge gets the phone call that they've been robbed, and then he sends the other guy to Alaska. I want that employee manning a radar tower in Alaska by the end of the day. We'll mail him his clothes.
I don't know if you can do that.
You can do anything in the IMF. The crew leaves as firemen successfully. And then back at HQ, Ethan busts out the old Bible so he can message Max because he keeps forgetting
the old Bible
the passages. Franz is being really annoying. Hey, Ethan. Ethan. Ethan Hunt. Talk to me. I miss you.
I wish Krieger was this French.
I want to talk to Ethan. I killed a rat.
Ethan, do you have up-close magic you can perform in front of me? I love it.
Kind of poetic that I was with a rat and I am the rat in the crew, no?
Also, I'm from Paris, and so is Ratatouille.
He wants assurances that he's going to get his money. And then he pulls out the knock list, and there's a really cool sequence. I think it's fun. It's classic Cruise stuff where he's like, I got the list, so he makes sure I go with you to meet Max. And Ethan's like, nah, dummy, that's a fake list. And he does a bunch of sleight of hand. By the way, that's not camera tricks. That is real sleight of hand magic that Tom Cruise is performing.
Yeah, he's actually a wizard.
That's true. Harry.
That's what Scientology gets you, man. You get magic powers.
But what's funny about this scene is he was playing mind games with him because Krieger did have the real knock list the whole time. And then Ving Rhames is just in the background like, I like magic.
If you try to slide a hand with my money, I'll cut your throat.
Yeah, and I'm going to leave because I'm angry because I feel silly. I feel silly now.
I hate up close magic.
I do not like English people.
Stupid Americans.
I need to go smoke a cigarette. Who has a match? You hear a car roll. We see Drake Hotel Chicago stamped on the Bible. And we notice that Ethan, now you can see in this scene that Ethan realizes everything in that moment. Like, oh, fuck, it's Jim Phelps, star of the original show. Damn it.
It was him the whole time.
And then Claire, I think it's weird that the way they wrote this scene, because she comes up to him and very earnestly says, I'm so sorry. And it's like she's apologizing for being a double agent. You know what I mean? But she's ostensibly apologizing for Krieger. But like there's so much weight to the way that she says it. And it's right as we see Ethan realize that it's Jim all along that she's, I'm so sorry. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like on a second watch, I think it's meant to have a different meaning. And Krieger did have the knock list.
I think that's true because he eventually, he figures out it's Jim in this moment. But he goes through all these steps to figure out if Claire's in on it specifically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And then we see a funny little scene where Luther's trying the sleight of hand tricks. and then Kittredge is angry about IMF getting robbed. So he frames Ethan's mom and uncle for like this massive drug ring. So Hunt goes to call Kittredge. And there's a cool scene where he's tracking his own time because he knows how long it would take them to find his position, to geolocate him if they will. And Hunt wanted him to know that he was in London. That's what Kittredge says, right? Mm-hmm. And Jim was next to him the whole time, wearing one of those creepy trench coats that you wear if you want to, like, flash your dick to people. Which is another... That's what they're for, right?
This is my Saturday ritual. I just happened to stumble...
Oh, Ethan, hi!
Oh, hey. Weird, bumping into you like this.
did you find my Bible?
I clearly need it back.
So they catch up on how Jim tracked him, climbed out of the river. It was bleeding everywhere. It was crazy. He should have been there. But
Kittredge is the mole.
Yeah. And then Jim says Kittredge is the one that shot him. And it's Jim behind it all. And we get this montage of why, which I think is neat. It's kind of interesting that while Jim's lying, the movie's not interested in like having anyone believe that anymore. If there's anyone out there who still doesn't mistrust John Voight, it shows like the reenactment is all of the John Voight being what a slime ball did, stuff. Yeah. I thought it was interesting. Did you dig that?
Oh yeah. I thought it was great. Cause this is a movie that doesn't think its audience is stupid for the most part.
Yeah.
So like, it's like, yeah, you guys know at this point he's the bad guy. So let's kind of show you kind of how Ethan's piecing it together. I do like the little bit where it shows that Claire's in on it by blowing up the car, but then he's like, no, not like that.
He could have done it himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's still unwilling to believe the obvious that Claire's in on it as well. Exactly. I thought the Franz knife was a good touch, even though it's silly if you think about it too long, that he just has like seven of his favorite knives, all the same brand.
It's a trusted brand. He knows. They look cool. They stab well. They kill people quickly.
They stab well.
Yeah.
I want your most stabbiest knife.
I would like your finest knife.
That's not a knife.
For the killing.
Claire blew up Hannah, he thinks. No, himself. And then he says, why, Jim? And it's like he's asking Jim why Jim is the asshole. But at the same time, he's still kind of going along with it. Like, why did Kittredge do that, right? And then Jim says, no one can know about him being alive or that I was out here doing what I was doing with this trench coat. Please don't tell anybody. It's something that I'm going through a phase.
I'm going through a phase. Listen, I'm not proud of it. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I gotta get this out of me.
Out of my system until I get my Bible back. Claire, and then Claire, we see like Claire beckon Ethan over and she like kissy kisses his hand. So I assume they make sweet love, right? Which is kind of awkward because Ethan's like, your husband's alive. But
also you might have killed our friends.
But also you're hot. So I don't know what to do here. Cut. We don't know what decision Ethan
Smash
made.
Smash cut.
Kittredge receives TGV tickets. It's the fucking bullet train.
What?
TGV tickets. TGV. TGV.
You remember GTV?
Garage television. I was confused, but it's the bullet train. And basically this is Ethan early on wanting to loop IMF in for the arrest, right? Into his master plan. And we see like someone back to like the spy noir stuff. Mystery Man's taking pieces out of a radio and that's how they smuggled a gun on board. And Max receives a phone call from Ethan. The disc is under her seat. So he gave her the real knock list. But Luther's job is to make sure that they don't have internet access to upload it to their mainframe or whatever. Which gets thwarted by the fucking waiter on the plane for a moment. And the money's in the baggage train.
You mentioned that Kittredge also got the watch and tickets for the train as well.
That's the TGV tickets.
Yeah, but he also got the watch. That's important.
He did. Oh, so he could watch what's going on.
He could watch what's going on.
Exactly. Nice. That's right, baby. And then, Luther is blocking Max from transmitting. The train attendant fucks everything up with the phone move. And then Kittredge sees Fabio trying to get in the bathroom while Luther's in the potty. That's not cool. So he runs over there like, hey, man. Wait your turn. I don't care how bad you got to pee.
Hey, man.
It's not cool. I don't know how you do things over here, but in America, people shit in peace. Yeah. All right.
That is a sacred temple in there. All right. It is a throne upon which we sit.
Claire knows about Jim. She tells Jim, she sees Jim sitting in the baggage train where the money is. Please don't kill Ethan. So she does have feelings for Ethan, right? Like he'll just, we'll keep him alive. We'll frame him for it.
Is it a good idea to kill him?
Jim is Ethan.
What?
Holy shit.
He had the mask thing on.
And then real Jim comes out all looted and booted with a gun.
Looted and booted.
And he's like, they stamped it, didn't they? Those damn Gideons. I knew I should have checked for a stamp. I knew if I took that one Bible from Chicago to Prague, that it might unravel this whole thing.
I knew I could have just owned my own fucking Bible.
Or like literally, this is the most published book on the planet. I probably could have found one anywhere. Actually, come to think of it, I don't know why I needed it at all. Because it's just Job 3:14. It's pretty easy to memorize. Well, what's done is done.
Oh, well. Guess I'll kill you now.
I just wanted a memento from the place where I drummed up this whole good plan.
I would look back on this Bible and smile.
Good times when I killed everybody I knew and loved. And he's really like, not only, I can understand why fans of the show were angry, because it's not only like they had him make this calculated move to set himself up for retirement after a life of good service and be like jaded.
Kill a bunch of people who, you know, respected him and trusted him.
That's fine, honestly. But it's like, he's also just like a piece of shit. Like shitty to his wife. He's like,
yeah.
I knew you'd want her after once you tasted the goods.
I've tasted the goods.
And then like,
ew.
Ethan gets him on camera with the glasses. That's great. You were wrong about one thing. She's not the only one who knows you're alive, right? Why the fuck does he shoot Claire instead of Ethan? Explain this to me, Steve, because it's the only thing that makes this movie, like, to me, not like a home run, is that decision. I'm like, what?
Yeah. No, I agree.
You have no reason? Pulls the gun off of his antagonist and shoots his wife.
Yeah, he's got the gun trained on Ethan, just shoots her just because, fuck her, I guess. I don't know, like, why he does it. And then he just runs away. He could literally have just shot Ethan 900 times before even...
Well, there's two bullets in there.
He could have shot Ethan like twice before running away, you know? It's so dumb. Also, I love how Ethan's like, I'm not the only one who's ever seen you. Let me take a solid 30.
Well, he says, it's not a gun.
To pull out the glasses and slowly put them on. You know what these are.
Like you literally invented
you
these.
Explained these to me. They were integral to your plan. And then like he puts the glasses on and then John Voight's like,
Oh, fuck, that's my thing.
Oh, you did the glasses thing.
You already had the face mask.
You should have stopped him, Claire. Bang.
Yeah. You didn't tell me you had the glasses. Bang. Mm-hmm. You bitch.
What? You kissed his knuckles, didn't you?
Why did he shoot Claire?
Because she kissed his knuckles. He was jealous. Mm. And then there has to be, in this type of movie, a chase and a fight on top of a train, or it's not a real movie.
Train level.
And then we get, the suction cups make a comeback on the train because bullet trains are going very fast.
I love the effect of how fast and powerful this train is.
Yeah.
Because they have to be on the ground or else it will fly them off the train. And it's so well done. And
Ethan's wild for not having the suction cuppy thingies, but he's still going out there, baby.
Yeah. And this movie does something that I wish the future movies would do. They don't do it. The one thing I wish that would carry on that they don't is that Ethan looks stupid sometimes, right? He looks silly. You don't see this type of thing in action movies a lot where he's up on the train and the wind's like blowing his cheeks and he's making goofy, weird faces. Even in the wire scene in the heist, like he makes some weird, silly faces that you don't see movie stars.
He doesn't
do.
Always have to look cool. It's real.
And I understand why people are like, oh, we can't make our hero look silly, that we can't make dumb faces. I actually think that's so endearing and it grounds it. Like, this perfect looking person is also human because they also make silly faces in situations where, yes,
that's why the
would.
Fast and Furious movies are so dumb, because they refuse to let the heroes like lose fights and stuff. And that's what makes, like you said, it humanizes them.
Yeah.
Jackie Chan knew this in the 70s.
Yeah.
He gets his ass beat the whole time and then overcomes that. And we love it.
Exactly. 100%. And the way that Ethan is like, okay, I'm going to look silly doing this, but it'll get me closer to Jen. Let me do a weird little cart flip thing that sucks me further down the train. Yeah. I'll catch myself.
Hopefully.
It looks awesome. Like, it does. It's riveting. It's a really good scene.
It's an incredible sequence. And this is what I was referencing earlier when I said I wanted to talk about something like how this movie affected me. Like, you know, Franz is coming to pick him up. He called the helicopter Uber, which is a really expensive, like, you know, version. It's above his exec.
Franz has accepted your ride. he has a 3.8 on Uber.
Yeah, it's not high. And then Ethan hooks him onto the train, right? And he gets sucked into the tunnel rather than die. And so he has to, like, drive the helicopter in the tunnel. By the way, the transfer was terminated from Max.
That was horrifying. Can you imagine flying a helicopter and you're stuck to a train going into a tunnel? It's like, but
then,
shit.
And Ethan's there, almost gets chopped in half, but then the rear propeller hits the ceiling when he's trying to angle it to do that. It's all so effective, so well done.
I do think Franz was he was a little like attracted to, like, ooh.
Oh, yeah.
His face shifts, like, ooh, I bet I could cut him in half.
This is going to be awesome.
Let me just move this joystick a little down.
I hate this guy.
Oh, dang it, my tail.
But then, like, we get the bubblegum move on the helicopter after jump, you know, as soon as he jumps on the helicopter, he's like, dun, 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 dun. And we get, like, the rear conductor seeing all this go on. It's kind of a comedic effect. I look down. I'm sitting there. It's like, it's 12:30 a.m., right? Like, it's today. That's how late I'm watching this movie. I'm typing my notes. My fucking palms were dripping sweat.
Oh, you were feeling it?
And I took note of it. Like, dude, this is like causing a physical reaction in me, how good this sequence is. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That's why I think the movie's great.
The only thing I wish they would do was they would have made the tunnel slightly larger. Only because there's a scene when that second train goes opposite. There's no way that that train and the helicopter can occupy the same space.
Well, I would like to think that the propeller is above the train. And then the helicopter is only taking the same width as the other train.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how good of a pilot he is it was like a barely happening.
Sure. But it is noticeable when that second train's going by, you don't see the helicopter. Like,
yeah.
They make a point not to be like, look at the helicopter barely making it.
Because
I think even they know, like, that's kind of hard to do.
Yeah. Luckily, Ethan grabbed the suction cuppy thing.
Yeah. And then he hops on. He, like you said, he gets the gum bomb out. And he's like, hasta lasagna. Don't get any on you.
Yeah. And Franz doesn't speak any good of English. So he's like, what?
He don't speak any good of English. But yeah, he blows up the helicopter. Ethan flies back onto the train.
The explosion pushes him, luckily, onto the train.
And then Jim's kind of like holding the, what do you call that, the little feet of the helicopter?
Yeah, he gets done like Jack did in the first scene, killed by Jim. They like show his body getting mutilated, you know?
Yeah, he falls onto the tracks and gets all busted up.
It's not fun.
Yeah, it looks gruesome.
And he's got the $10 million in his vest. That's unfortunate.
And I appreciate that they they show him getting his just desserts.
Yep, that's right. And then Luther gives up Max and the disc to Kittredge. And then there's a cool sequence where she tries to bribe him and shit, and it's not going to go well for her, right? And he's like, my lawyers are going to tear you apart. And he's like, oh, let's just avoid the court. I sent a guy to Alaska, and I don't remember who that was. I can do whatever I want.
Yeah, I'm going to send you to Alaska.
I'll
mail you your clothes.
They covered everything up, because the next thing we see is Ethan and Luther together, but we can hear the news like, oh, it was fucking crazy. There's a helicopter in the train tunnel. What a freak accident. So we know that they have power over the media from that little tidbit. And then they're drinking beer. They're no longer disavowed. And he's going to be a good citizen now, but Ethan doesn't want to be in the IMF anymore, he says. And I said, LOL, right? Because of course we know there's at least 6 more movies. Mm-hmm. So apparently he changes his mind. But at the end of this movie, he's like, I think I'm done. I'm done being an agent. And we cut to Ethan on a flight the same way the movie opened, except it was Jim Phelps at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And so this is like the perfect narrative, visual passing of the torch from the character of Jim Phelps from the show to Ethan Hunt now in the movies, because now he's the plain movie guy, right?
He's going to watch the cinema of the Caribbean.
Yeah, it's Ethan being offered a movie, which is, of course, a mission. And I assume it's an impossible one.
One can assume.
That's it.
Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun.
And that's it, baby.
Yeah, that's Mission Impossible, the very first one.
The very first one.
I'm really excited to get into this franchise.
Me too. I'm actually hyped about Mission Impossible Mondays. We're going to do something at the end of every recap and review. We're going to rank the current Mission Impossible franchise as we've seen them. Right now, it's pretty easy. We've each only seen the first one. And so our ranking is
number one.
It's number one.
Mission Impossible 1 so far is number one. Will it be succeeded in by Mission Impossible 2?
Very likely
will
not.
Mission Impossible 2 not be up to the challenge of unseating Mission Impossible? That's hard to say. Mission Impossible 1?
I'm trying so hard. I love it.
But yeah, so by the end of the series, you will have the official streaming things ranking for all of the Mission Impossible movies.
Individually.
We have to agree.
What?
We have to agree on this.
We're going to have to agree?
Yeah, so if we're like, oh, I think this should be third, and you're like, oh, I think it should be one, we have to debate, and then we have to come to a decision. Like, okay.
Oh, my God.
One of us has to lose.
Oh, my God. Okay.
I think it'll be a fun little debate to have.
Okay. Let's do that. That's what's going to happen at the end of every Mission Impossible Monday extravaganza.
That is our impossible mission.
If you have any thoughts on Mission Impossible, you can email us at streamingthingspod@gmail.com. Look forward to next Monday. Tomorrow you're getting Crossing Streams, and then Wednesday you're getting Lost. Thursday.
No, Wednesday you're getting Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
My bad.
Thursday you're getting Lost.
That's right, baby.
With Madison.
Ooh, Madison's back.
Madison's back,
and
baby.
Friday, you're going to get Strange New Worlds with Steve and Phil. So it's an action-packed week. We love you all. Thank you for listening. That's all the time we have for right now. My name is Chris.
And my name is Steve.
And this is Streaming Things. Dun, 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 dun. Be streaming. Bum, bum.
We are back, and it's awesome.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing.
Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.